You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
But I do a lot. I'ma make a toast cause we still alive. No big, I feel like Pac. I shoot the shot. I'm coming in hot.
I doubled my weight by wearing this outfit, which is from the McVeightown Fire Department. And by the way, I'm not stealing it from anybody that actually needs it at this particular moment in time. But I wanted to... Can you get my table for me? I wanted to talk to you about a fire in 2018 in California. It was called the Ranch Fire, and it was the largest wildfire still in California history in 2018. And in terms of acres burned, it started in late July, north of the community of Upper Lake, because you all know where that is. And it burned 410,203 acres in Colsa, Glen, Lake, and Mendocino counties. And it destroyed 280 structures. It resulted in the loss of life of one firefighter, and three firefighters were injured in this fire. And then that fire actually combined with another fire that was called the River Fire, and it made up an even larger blaze in 2018 that they called the Mendocino Complex Fire, because it was these two wildfires combined. And it burned in total 459,120 acres. Here, we'll give you another shot here. We get like at the TV. And the interesting thing about this fire is that, just to give you some comparison, 459,000 acres is all of Mifflin County. And then if you were to go from the border of Mifflin County and cover completely into Huntingdon and all the way up through State College and take out State College, that is the amount of acreage that this, the Mendocino, the California Lake Fire, that's how much it burned during that time. So I have a little video clip here that you can look at, see a little bit of it. That gives you a little sense of what was going on in this fire. But here's the crazy thing, right? After meticulous and thorough investigation, CAL FIRE, which is the California Fire Department organization, they determined that the ranch fire was caused by a property owner using a hammer to drive a metal stake into the ground to plug a yellow jacket nest. The sparks from the hammer ignited the fire, which quickly spread to other areas of the property, and then, of course, continued on by dry winds, strong winds, high temperatures, and dry vegetation. And so just that spark from some guy hitting a hammer became the largest fire in California history. And so something as simple as that. Can you see that spark there? Just out of curiosity, how many of you can hear that? All right, how many of you think that's a really horribly annoying sound? Yeah, that's because you're young. There's an interesting thing about this, that you can't hear this higher-pitched sounds as you get older. And so, yeah, little kids will actually cover their ears because it hurts so much, and dogs will run. But a little spark started this huge fire. And I want to talk to you this morning, as we continue this Churchianity series, about something little, a little spark of something can do something that's incredible. And I want to talk about specifically the spark of passion from just one student can start a fire for Jesus. And the question is, are you going to fan that flame or pour water on it? And so we're in Churchianity 101. I need to take this. This is so heavy. Churchianity 101. And this week we're doing Home Economics 201 because we're on the 200 level. In 2 weeks after Fifth Sunday, we're going to come back to the 100 level when we talk about Home Economics 101. But we're talking about students today. And I want to share some thoughts for you. And honestly, I was telling Zach ahead of time, like, this is a little bit challenging to me personally. And you'll see as we look at this. But the point that I want us to look at, and again, with this series, we're doing two things. We're looking at principles that apply to the whole Bible. And then we're looking at what are some practices, what are the ways we do that here at MC3. So the principle that we will see is that the church should empower the next generation. And the practice is, so MC3... Don't break my pack. Has MC3 student. And, oh my word, those things are heavy. Gives you a lot of respect for all that goes into a fire. And even walking up steps. I have struggled to walk up the ramp back there. And somewhere I have shoes. Yeah, I do. Now I'm going to play a little Mr. Rogers. So the church should empower the next generation. So MC3 has MC3 student. And I want to talk about why we do what we do and why students matter. And again, this might not be anything new to you. Certainly, if you've been around MC3 for any length of time, you see that we care about students. But I'm going to tell you a story. We're going to read a story that is a biblical story that is probably very familiar to you. And even if you've never gone to church before, probably if you've never ever gone to church at all. So, like, if you happen to, I don't know, hear somebody listening to this as you're walking by them on the street. So the idea, the story of David and Goliath. And, of course, we know the story of David and Goliath. Everybody understands that. And, of course, everybody talks about, you know, what are the Goliaths in your lives? What are the giants in your lives? And as we're going to see, it looks like there's a human sitting here. That's really disturbing. Okay, there. As we're going to see, the Goliath in this story, the Goliath in this story actually isn't Goliath. Because you're going to see something, and again, you probably are very familiar with this story, and as I walk through it, I want you to see some things that are happening directed towards this young kid named David. This young guy named David, and you know him as King David. We did a whole series about David called After God, and that's on the opening slide there in the announcement loop, the first slide there, and you can look that up, or one of the early slides. But I want to talk this morning about how sometimes Goliath isn't the Goliath. So we're going to turn on the house lights here, and you guys, if you have a paper Bible, you can turn to 1 Samuel 17. Kendra read a portion of this a moment ago, and if you have the YouVersion app, just 1 Samuel is about 12, 15 in there down the list, and just find verse 17. And again, you're probably familiar with the story, but probably haven't looked at it the way we're going to look at it today, because you're going to see that David was criticized because of his age in four different ways. In four different things. And so let me give you a little background. Again, you probably are familiar with this, but just to give you the full picture here. First of all, it's the Israelites, God's chosen people, versus the Philistines. And the Philistines, as we'll see in a little bit, they were not circumcised, which circumcision was a part of the sign, the covenant for the Israelite people. And so you're going to hear them being called uncircumcised Philistines. And that basically just meant they weren't part of God's promise. They weren't following God. So it doesn't really have as much to do as with their physical makeup, but has more to do with the fact that they were not following God. And so that's what's going on. So there's this battle line that's drawn up. The Israelites are on one side of the valley. The Philistines are on the other side of the valley. And they're kind of at a stalemate. And so this guy named Goliath, who is a Philistine, he walks out into the middle of the battlefield. And it says he's about over 9 feet tall, which is really tall. Okay, he's over 9 feet tall, and you can read in the passage in the first part of 1 Samuel 17, it talks about the weight of his armor, and I mean, it's probably nothing. This is nothing compared to that and just how much he carried, and even the tip of his spear was, I forget what off the top of my head what it was, but he was a huge guy. And so he stands out in front of the Israelites and says, look, we don't need to have needless bloodshed. Let's do it this way. I'll come out and fight on behalf of the Philistines, and if you send out your best to fight me on behalf of the Israelites, and winner take all. Whoever wins, that army wins. And that's the end. The other side will surrender. So it's kind of an easy, simple way to deal with the battle. And of course, the Israelites, seeing Goliath, were scared out of their minds. And so no one dared to accept this challenge. And the passage says that he would come out daily and just say, come on, everybody, what are you going to do? Who you got? And no one was willing to stand up to Goliath. And so so that's kind of one part of the story. Then you've got this guy named David. And David is the youngest of multiple brothers. And three of his oldest brothers, Eliab and the other two, and we'll come back to Eliab in a second, they were out in the war. They were in the army. So they went off to war. And so they're here in this battle line on behalf of the Israelites. And their dad, Jesse, sends little David with a care package to the battlefront. He's like, take these things to your brothers, take them to their commanders too. You know, a little care package. And, you know, if you're in college, I don't know if you've gotten care packages. I remember getting care packages. It just meant somebody send you like cookies or things like that. I was like, yes, it means something. And that's exactly what's going on here. So he sends little David with this care package to his brothers. And so David shows up and he gets there and sees Goliath come out. Just happened to be at that time that Goliath comes out, taunts the Israelites and says, you know, come on, what you got? Can you do this? And so that's kind of the background of where we're going to start this story. And again, you're probably familiar with that. The first thing we're going to see in this is that David's motives were criticized because of his age. And that's what BC means. It means because. Because that's how the young people do it. So he was criticized. His motives were criticized because of his age. And again, if you're familiar with the story, you might not have picked up on what's happening here. So let's pick up in verse 26 of 1 Samuel 17. It says, David, who was talking to the men standing around him, because he heard this taunt, he asked, what's in it for the man who kills that Philistine and gets rid of this ugly blot on Israel's honor? Who does he think he is anyway, this uncircumcised Philistine, taunting the armies of God alive? This is from the Message version. It's kind of a nice paraphrase of the story. It says, they told him what everyone was saying about what the king would do for the man who killed the Philistine. So they just explained. And by the way, what they had said was going to happen is that Saul, the king at the time, King Saul, would offer one, his daughter in marriage. They would marry his daughter, so you would get to marry the princess, which means you'd be part of the royal family. And so that would be part of it. And then they also said, and it was very clearly emphasized in the way they responded, and you won't have to pay taxes ever. And so they were like, yeah, the daughter, but no taxes, right? So that's what was offered. So they told David that that's what was being offered in to win this battle. So the story goes on and says, Eliab, again, we talked about Eliab, he was the oldest brother, Eliab, his older brother, heard David fraternizing with the men, and he lost his temper. So he's mad. Little David is here. David's bringing him a gift. Like, come on, man. Help a brother out. And so he's bringing this gift, like literally his brother. And so he hears him. He loses his temper and says, what are you doing here? Why are you minding your own business? Tending that scrawny flock of sheep. So he's demeaning him. Like, look, you're little. You got your little sheep. Oh, look at you. I'm a man. I'm in the army. So why don't you go back to your little sheep, okay? He says, I know what you're up to. He says, I know your motives. You're just young. You don't really care about the things that matter. You're just doing this. Why are you doing this? Because you've come down here to see the sights, hoping for a ringside seat at a bloody battle. You're just here to see the sights. You're just slowing down to see what's happening with the accident on the other side of the road. Rubbernecker delay. That's what we called it in Delaware. What's there's a looky-loo? I've heard that one too. Like, that's all you're doing. You don't care about helping those people over there. You're just like, ooh, maybe I'll get to see somebody on a stretcher. Like you're just doing that. And I know your motives. I get it, because you're young. And that's all you young people ever do. That's all you ever do. And then I love the way the Message puts this. You know, he says, what is it with you? Replied David. All I did was ask a question. I think the NIV says, can I even ask a question? Like, and I could totally hear that. Like, come on, can't I even ask a question? Get off my back, okay? Anyway, so he says, can I even ask the question, ignoring his brother? He turned to someone else, asked the same question, and got the same answer as before. So he finds out what's up. He finds out what's the deal. This is what's happening. And his brother right away says, you're young, you're stupid, and I know why you're doing this. I know why you're doing this. And so his motives were criticized because of his age. And my question is, how often do you look down on someone who's younger and judge their motives based on their age? Like, you just right away, oh, I know what's going on. You're a millennial, so I can expect right now that you're not even here to work, because millennials don't do any work. And you know, oh, you're a Gen Z, you're a Gen Alpha. Like, we could pick all these titles. And can I just be straight? This is going to sound like an old person talking for a second. But, like, I don't remember there being, like, these generational lines when I was younger. Like, we got, there was the boomers, and oh, now boomers are a bad thing. Hey, the boomers kind of created the fact that we have a wealthy society. They won a war that was kind of a big deal. But anyway, all this question is, like, how often do we look at someone and say, well, you're young, and so I know. I get it. And I'm going to say this later, but I'll say it now. But before you're like, yeah, you old people, and this is in your discussion guide this week too, we are all older than someone. And so you might be like, yeah, boomer. Yeah, yeah, Gen, I'm Gen X. That's not really cool because we had an X. It's everything was X back then. X Games, Extreme, XX. That's not what I was getting at all. How often do we criticize and say, well, that's just because of who you are. But, you know, I've seen this. I remember doing this when I was a little Gen Xer, being like, well, brothers, you're so young. And I can see this in families all the time. Well, I'm older than you, so I know better. And so this idea of criticizing their motives, and it kind of comes in this package of like, oh, I know because of your age, this is what you're in. That's what you're doing. This is why you're doing it. And the question is for us, how often do we criticize people and just judge their motives because of their age? And I would challenge you, as I challenge myself, is we need to believe the best. Believe the best about everyone, no matter their age. So that was the first thing we see in the story, is that his brothers were criticizing his motives. The second thing we see is that David's passion was criticized because of his age. And as the story continues, we see, it says here, then the things David was saying were picked up and reported to Saul. Now Saul's the king. And Saul's hearing about this guy, and he doesn't know much about him at the time. He's just like, hey, dude, Saul, we're hearing this guy. He thinks he can take this on. He's upset about what's going on. So Saul sent for him. And then David walks into Saul's presence, and we don't see what actually happened in that moment. But we know that David came in with passion. And it's been weeks that this taunting thing has been happening, and the army was unwilling to do a thing. The Israelites were unwilling to do a thing. But David shows up to Saul and says, Master, don't give up hope. Let me just stop there. He says, don't give up hope. Like, he could totally, Saul would be like, boy, who do you think you're talking to? I'm the king. You don't tell me. But he says, don't give up hope. I'm ready to go and fight this Philistine. David's got passion. He's got excitement. There's a spark. And there's a spark that's way more than just a little spark. It's like on fire. He's like, oh, don't give up. I'll do it. I will do it, Saul. I can take this guy down. But Saul, being a good older person, it's like, whoa, hold on there, buddy. I appreciate that passion, but you know what? You don't know how the real world works. That's not the way it works around here, son. He says, you can't go and fight this Philistine. You're too young and inexperienced. And he's been at this fighting business since before you were born. And, you know, I'm definitely at the age now where, like, I talk to people and I'm like, oh, yeah, how are you doing? That's great. And, you know, wow, I'm excited about how you're serving at MC3. And then I do the math and I'm like, wow, I was in college before you were even born. That makes me feel old. But it's easy. That's what he says. You can't do this. He says, you can't. I appreciate your passion, buddy, but look, let me tell you how things really are. This is how it really goes. And he goes on, and then David said, I've been a shepherd. He's like, give him his case, his story. He says, I've been a shepherd tending sheep for my father. Whenever a lion or bear or tiger, oh my, came and took a lamb from the flock, I'd go after it, knock it down, rescue the lamb. And if it turned on me, I love this, I'd grab it by the throat. I'd grab it by the throat, wring its neck, and I killed it. Oh, wait, no, sorry, skip it. Wring its neck and kill it, yeah. So I love that. Like, oh, yeah, I grab a lion by the throat. Oh, I'm one. Drop the lion mic. And kill it. He says, lion or bear, it made no difference. I killed it. And I think he meant literally. But he was like, yeah, I killed it on that one, yo. All right. He says, I killed it. And I'll do the same thing to this Philistine pig, which, by the way, is a huge insult to someone that is not Jewish, because Jews did not eat pork. Anyway, it's this Philistine pig who is taunting the troops of God alive. Of God. God who delivered me, God was the one that did it, who delivered me from the teeth of the lion and the claws of the bear, he will deliver me from this Philistine. Saul was like, all right, go and God help you. Like, just, oh, God love him. You know, okay, you're dead. But hey, have fun with that. Have fun with that. But right away, his passion, Saul was like, no. Oh, you got that fire? Oh, don't worry, I'll put that out. And quickly was trying to take down that passion. And have you ever shut someone down, someone's passion? Philippians, I have it right here. 1 Thessalonians 5:19 says we shouldn't quench the Spirit's fire, which means if someone is passionate and God has given them a God-given passion, who are we to throw water onto that? And the question is, have we done that? Have you thrown water? Have you put down someone's passion, someone's ideas? Like that's a crazy idea. That's not going to work. Or their dreams. Hey, what if? What if church looked different? What if we reached people in a new way? What if we acted in a way that was not like the rest of our culture? What if we said sin is sin? What if we said things are wrong? Like, and we kind of go, no, hey, buddy, that's not the way we do it around here. Don't rock the boat. And if we shut down someone's dreams, someone's passion, and I'm not just saying because, like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we flew on unicorns? Like, I'm not Pegasuses, because unicorns don't fly. Only Pegasuses fly. Anyway, but like, we put that passion, we criticize that passion, and we shut down someone's dream. And I know, I mean, we get it, right? When you get older, it naturally happens because you remember when you had that dream. And it didn't work out. So, let's make sure we shut down everybody else. Calm down here. There's not too much going on. You can't do this. You can't, Nemo. And let's just be clear. The world needs dreamers. Right? It takes dreamers to change the world. If there weren't for dreamers, there wouldn't be electricity. If there weren't dreamers, we wouldn't be driving cars. If there weren't dreamers, there wouldn't be microchips running pretty much everything. Like, it was for dreamers saying, what if? What if? And we, as older people, because you're older than somebody, what can you do to come alongside the passion of someone younger and say, let's fan that into flame, not just throw water on it? Because that's what Saul did. So he's got his motives were criticized, his passion was criticized. The third thing we see is that his methods were criticized because of his age. So then the story goes on, and it says, then Saul outfitted David as a soldier in armor. He put his bronze helmet on his head and belted his sword on him over the armor. He's like, okay, buddy, well, if you're going to do this, this is the way it's always done. We've never done it anything other way, and this is the way you do it, so this is how it's always done. And then it says, David... that subway line is crazy. David tried to walk, but he could hardly budge. And David told Saul, I can't even move with all this stuff on me. I'm not used to this. And he took it all off. And so now Saul is like, okay, God help you. May God be with you. Okay. And now he's like not even wearing the armor. So what did David, this young guy, do? He's like, oh, I'm not doing it with the armor thing. Okay. You sure? Because here's my armor. You need to wear this. No, it says, then David took his shepherd's staff, selected 5 smooth stones from the brook. And by the way, they were probably like sizable stones. It wasn't like little pebbles. Dink, dink, oh, you got me. But these were sizable stones. And then his sling. He put them in the pocket of his shepherd's pack, and with a sling in his hand, he approached Goliath. And so David did it in a way that they've never done it before. David did it in a way that no one's ever seen before. And Saul was quick to be like, no, that's not how you do it, buddy. Here's the armor. Here's the armor. This is how it's supposed to be done. And so again, the question is for us. Have you looked at someone's methods and said, oh, it won't work that way. That won't really work because it's different. That's not going to work that way. That's not going to happen. Sorry. Like, I know you want to try things differently, but look, it just doesn't work. Trust me. Your methods are wrong. So don't you just do it the way everyone else is doing it and live. Okay? We'll all get along. Because change doesn't work. Staying the same is the best. And again, this is challenging to me. Like, we've got younger generations with ideas. They have ideas. What the heck? And you know, we're in this room with this incredible worshipful light because of some younger people with their new ideas. And I'm like, that's not how we do it around here. And so there's this, okay, how can I encourage you in what you're doing? And so do we do that? So his motives were criticized, his passion was criticized, his methods were criticized because of his age, and finally, his abilities were criticized because of his age. And this is probably the part where we know the most about. It says, then as the Philistine paced back and forth, his shield bearer in front of him, he noticed David. So David's walking out with his staff, his sling, and his stones. And he took one look down on him and sneered, a mere boy, apple-cheeked and peach-fuzzed. Like, I love the message there. He's like, what? Okay, guys, for real? Okay, time out. Seriously? You're sending him to fight me? You do realize he's a boy. Am I a dog that you're coming at me with sticks? Because that's what we always say. And there was that old VeggieTales. He's like, am I a dog that you are coming at me with sticks? And he's like, I don't know what that means. But that's what he says. Am I a dog that you're coming after me with a stick? And he cursed him by his gods. Come on, said the Philistine, and I'll make roadkill of you for the buzzards. I'll turn you into a tasty morsel for the field mice. He's like, you can't fight me. You're just a little kid. You're just a boy. You're too young. You don't have what it takes. And Goliath knew. There's no way this boy can take me down. Fine. Let's go, if this is what you want to do. And he criticized his abilities. And so again, bringing it back to us. Do we look at someone's age and assume that they can't do what we older people can do? And again, like if you've been part of MC3 for more than like 20 minutes, you realize that we don't feel that way because we have students serving in incredible ways. We've got younger people that many churches would say, frankly, the guy in front of you is too young to be a lead pastor. At least he was 10 years ago when we started this, 13 years ago when we started this thing. But do we say no? No, there's something that you have to offer. Do we just assume that they're younger and they can't do what we do? But I would challenge you that they can. And we need to come along and fan that fire. Because again, just that little spark started the biggest wildfire in California's history. And there are sparks all around us. And I guess the opposite is true too. If we're all older than someone, we're all younger than someone. And we've probably been there. We've probably been there when someone criticized our motives and assumed what we knew they knew why we were doing it. Maybe they criticized our passion. Next slide. Maybe they criticized our passion for why we were doing it or our methods. That's not how you do it. And again, there's nothing wrong with learning. Like, don't get me wrong. We're not talking about being jerks to old people. I appreciate that you don't. Thank you. But we're talking about, because I'm an old person. I'm talking about, like, what is it that we see there? And then their ability to say, no, you can't do this. Do we come alongside of that? And I'm running short on some time here. So I'm not going to read the story to you that we have here on the screen as the story wraps up. But the short version is this, if you're not aware of it already. Spoiler alert, you can read 1 Samuel 17 yourself and just be shocked when you see the ending. But David wins. His first stone, he flings it. It sinks into Goliath's forehead, and he drops down. And actually, jump two slides forward, Isaac, and I'll read the very last line of this thing. It says, "That's how David beat the Philistine, with a sling and a stone. He hit him and killed him. No sword for David." So he didn't do it the right way. He didn't do it the way everyone always done it. He went forward with passion, trusting. And that's, by the way, the part that I skipped is he's like, when he says to Goliath, he's like, "Look, I'm coming in God's name. So it doesn't matter whether you think you can beat me. Because you're not fighting me, you're fighting God. Because my passion isn't based in I'm young and strong and confident." He says, "My passion is based in the fact that Jesus," or he didn't know Jesus at the time, "but God is with me. That I'm coming in the name of the Lord, of Yahweh." And so he killed him, no sword for David. Then David ran up to the Philistine and stood over him, pulled the giant sword from his sheath, which was had to be huge, and just dropped it down, finished the job by cutting off his head. Nobody ever picks up on that story in preschool, that part of the story. It's like, yeah, he hit him, told him he's down. Doink, okay, he's done. And then he cut off his head. And then the story goes on. They said they carried Goliath's head on a spear around. And we're like, look at us, we won. So again, you know, interesting preschool conversation. But David won. And so the whole point here was that the issue with everyone around David was saying, "You're too young." And David says, "I've got God. I've got passion. I've got a spark from God. I can do this because it's not about me. It's about him in me." And so we need to be careful that we don't become the Goliath that really isn't the Goliath in the story, because we encourage the passion of those younger than us, of the students in our midst, of the students in our homes, of the students around us. So again, motives, passion, methods, abilities. You're going to have a chance in your prime groups this week to really, what does that look like today? How do we do that? What does that look like in a very practical and perhaps discouraging way? So the church should empower the next generation. So MC3 has MC3 Student. So I'm going to take a quick moment to give you a quick overview of MC3 Student. So what is MC3 Student? And next week, or 2 weeks, because next week's this Sunday, in 2 weeks we're going to come back to this passage about Deuteronomy 6, but the short version of Deuteronomy 6 says that it's the parents' responsibility to disciple or to raise their kids to know Jesus. It's not the church's job. It's the parents' job. And so we want to come alongside parents and say, how can we help you do that? And again, a lot of churches, and I have this here in my notes, I'll just read it. Our core value for family says, God has given parents, not the church, the responsibility of being the spiritual leaders in the home. Therefore, as a church, we value doing everything that we can to help the family succeed. We want to come alongside of that. And there's this quote specifically about student ministry let me read the quote. It's from Orange, which is part of our philosophy of how we do things based on Deuteronomy 6, which, again, we'll talk more about that in 2 weeks when we'll talk about MC3 Family. And we're going to have Jumpstart as part of the Church Unity Lab. So you're all going to experience what that is. But there's no meal afterwards, just to be clear. Okay, so anyway, this quote, it says, "From the time students hit middle school," and if you're a parent of teenagers, of students, you might be able to grab this, or you were a parent of students. "From the time students hit middle school, they start moving away from home. They're not doing anything wrong. It's just the way they're made. They're becoming independent, and they begin redefining themselves through the eyes of other people who are not in their immediate family. The older they get, the more important it is to have other voices," not in quotes, but "other voices in their lives saying the same things, but in a different way." And so this is from our website. If you go to mc3church.org/mc3student, you can read all this yourself. I'm going to highlight some things. But basically, MC3 Student, in a simple way, continues the C3 discipleship process, partnering with parents as an other voice, in a way that is designed for the needs of 6th to 12th grade students. And so one thing that we do with C1, you can go back. That's too soon, buddy. All right. Don't look at that yet. That was my big reveal. We have a student prime on Tuesday nights here at MC3. And we have student prime because C1, we want students to be involved in community. And there are small groups with students together with an MC3 student staff member who cares for them and mentors them and gets to know them. And you're going to get to know them in a few minutes. And student prime is the second, third, and fourth Sunday of the month. Why not the first? So that they can be a part of their family with family prime on the first Sunday of the month. They're doing the same discussion guide that the adults do, but it's been adapted by the leaders for the students. And sometimes they'll serve in C3 opportunities during that time. They'll have special game nights. There's some different things that they do. But that's primarily what MC3 student looks like as a ministry at Student Prime on Tuesday nights. But then when it comes to C2, so that's C1, C2 congregation, and by the way, this is all reviewed from week one of this series. C2 congregation says, in MC3 student, and this is important, you will not see an alternative student worship service. This is on purpose, based on our core value of family. So rather than splitting families up by age when they arrive to worship, because a lot of churches do that, and again, that's cool. Well, this is how we practice the principle of caring for families. But a lot of churches will be like, okay, you hit the door, you go there, you go to nursery, you go to students, you go to, you know, and then everybody splits up, and then we all jump back in the car afterwards and then leave. And so we are very on purpose about keeping the family together, which again, why do every Sunday they say, kids, you can go to Ignition? Because we want the younger kids in with their families to worship. So there isn't a separate worship service. Instead, we encourage students to worship and serve with their families in the worship experience, which then leads us to C3, which is caring. At MC3, we do not believe that students are the church of the future. People say that all the time. Oh yeah, those teenagers, they're the church of the future. No. If they're followers of Jesus, they're the church of today. If you are 7 years old and you follow Jesus, you're the church of today. Because the church is people that follow Jesus. Don't let me get passionate. All right. And I'm running out of time, so I definitely can't get passionate. But I was a youth pastor for over a decade. With that in mind, we encourage students to serve throughout MC3 now. Maybe they're a part of the band, which you saw that this morning. Maybe they're in a green shirt because they're serving at Ignition. You see that this morning. Maybe they're helping with first impressions because they're wearing an orange shirt. And you saw that this morning. We have students that serve because we believe that students are the church of today and they need to serve and be a part of this. So they care. So that's what we do. And I have a... Oh, I don't even have my note here. My notes cut off because I got so excited about writing stuff. So one of the things that's very unique about MC3 Student is what we have. It's called Parent Connect. And we're going to have a chance to talk about this if I don't keep talking too much. But Parent Connect is an opportunity for you as parents. And I'm saying this is for you because it's your job to disciple your kids. And I'm going to totally guilt trip you right now. If you don't want to have any involvement in discipling your kids, then don't show up at Parent Connect. Don't. Like, why be involved? Why don't you just let someone else figure it out? Unfortunately, God's going to hold you accountable for your parenting and not your MC3 student staff, not this church. And so a Parent Connect is an opportunity for parents and students to meet, to talk, and say, hey, you know, you're going to meet Scott and Janine. Like, oh, I'm Scott and Janine's student prime leader. Or I am Scott and Janine. I'm your student prime leader. And they're saying, hey, we've noticed that, you know, a couple of weeks ago, suddenly little Susie, are we clear with Susie's? Any Susie's? No? Okay. Suddenly little, like, not little Susie, suddenly high school junior Susie, like, just a couple weeks ago, things really started getting down. What's going on? And that's an opportunity for parents to come alongside and the leaders to come alongside the parents and say, look, yeah, something bad happened in school, and they've really been struggling with it. And that leader say, yeah, I noticed something. I've been praying for them. How can I help you? How can I pray for you? How can I come alongside? How can I encourage them? And so Parent Connect is a chance for parents to connect with the MC3 student staff. And the next one is scheduled for October 27th. And they've set up, Zach and his team have this tailgate party idea. I love it. So right out here in the parking lot, before or after the worship experience, you can go out there. They got music playing. Sometimes they have donuts and coffee and some other good stuff, maybe just donuts. But you can go and meet with the leaders, and you'll probably be directed to, that your student is in my group, and have a chance just to dialogue back and forth and to care for one another and help them so that they can come alongside you and be the other voice. Because the parent can say, and I'm a parent, and I've worked my way out of my teenage years. And Kirk's a parent, and he's working out his way out of having unmarried children in his home. Yesterday, Trent and Leia got married, so he's down two daughters, one to go and one son. Yay, Isaac. Yay. But the point is this, that I love this idea, and I would love, I do love this idea, be like, you know, we've been struggling with this at home, to have a leader say, oh, I can help you with that. Because when I was a youth pastor, I remember saying things, we're going to go a little over, guys. When I was a youth pastor, I remember having a conversation with one of my students, or one of my parents of students years ago, and I remember saying, you know, I told them about this concept, and the dad was like, and their daughter was like, oh, I love that. And came home and was like, Dad, Pastor Sean said this, and it was so amazing. And the dad came to me later, and he was like, I've been saying that to her for months. And she's always like, Dad, Dad, you don't know, okay? Dad, whatever. And then I say the exact same thing as another voice. And she's like, that's amazing. And that's part of this teamwork, this connection that we have. So the next one's coming out October 27th, and you're going to hear more about that from these leaders, again, if I can shut up. So the church should empower the next generation, so MC3 has MC3 student. And I'm just going to drop a couple of quick things that maybe you want to write down so that you can talk about it in your prime group a little bit further. But biblically, youths were used. So we're going to talk about some youths used in the Bible. Did you say you? Anyway, if you understand that reference, then you're definitely older and you need to care about the next generation. Did you just say you? Okay, the youths. Anyway, so some youths used. The first one we saw was a young pastor. And this is probably the one you know the most about. A young pastor to grow the church. And there was this guy, his name was Timothy. And he was a young guy. And he was pastoring a church in Ephesus. And Paul was his mentor. And Paul, the apostle Paul, was his mentor and was there to care for him. And Timothy did a great job. But he was leading people well older than him. Some say he was probably in his 20s, maybe in his 30s, maybe. And of course, Paul told him in 1 Timothy chapter 4, and if you've grown up in church, or especially as a student in student ministry ever, you've probably heard this passage. Paul says, teach these things. Insist that everyone learn them. He says, Paul, tell Timothy, I want you to teach all these things. Teach them all. Even though they're older than you, don't worry about it. He goes on and says, don't let anyone think any less of you because you are young. Be an example to all believers. So he says, don't let them look down on you. Don't let them think any less of you. Your age doesn't matter because you're the pastor of that church in Ephesus, and you lead them. And you lead them with everything that God has given you. In what you say, in the way you live, in your love, in your faith, and your purity. Be an example. Don't be a jerk. Be an example. But don't let them look down on you. Until I get there, keep focusing on the reading of scriptures to the church, encouraging the believers, and teaching them. He says, you need to do this, and don't let them look down on you. So that was a young pastor that grew the church, and you're probably familiar with that story. So God used that guy, Timothy. There's another interesting story about this young couple that God used to raise the Savior of the world. Okay, watch this with me. This is the Christmas story, okay? We're a little early. But it says, in the sixth month of Elizabeth's pregnancy, God sent the angel Gabriel to Nazareth, we know Nazareth, to a town in Galilee, to a virgin pledged to be married to a man named Joseph, a descendant of David. The virgin's name was Mary. So here's an interesting thing, Jewish culture. Pledging to be married, or betrothal, which was what it was called. It was basically a commitment between the families of these two people, of the groom and the bride, the male and the female, that they would get married. And it was a commitment even before the actual ceremony took place. And the interesting thing about betrothal is that betrothal, so married is betrothed, Joseph is betrothed, they're pledged to be married. Betrothal happened shortly after puberty. Like, let that sink in. Y'all know what puberty is, right? When did that happen for you? And I'll just be honest, girls do it better earlier than guys do. And so Mary here was maybe 12 or 13. If she had just completed puberty, how does that work? Had puberty, she pubered. Dated, pubertized, yeah, whatever. Okay, let's just stop talking. It's getting really gross. All right, so she's probably 12 or 13. And the angel said, hey, you're going to raise a son. You're going to name him Jesus. And that means Joseph, because guys are a little bit later. Joseph might have been 14 or 15. And God felt that these two people could handle the Savior of the world. So I think maybe we need to perhaps give our students some opportunities to serve. And challenge and grow them and encourage them. And so I'm just going to skip the rest of the passage. You know what happens. She has a baby. He's named Jesus. He's kind of important in the story. So we got the young pastor to grow the church, the young couple to raise the Savior. And finally, you've got young guys to transform the world. And we know them as the disciples or the apostles. And there were 12 of them that followed Jesus everywhere. And in Matthew chapter 17, I alluded to this a few months ago. But there's this interesting little story, and because of time, I'm going to summarize it a little bit. But they get to Capernaum, and the collectors of the temple tax go to Peter and say, doesn't your teacher pay the temple tax? Like, why are you guys paying your taxes? Why aren't you paying the taxes? And Peter's like, well, yeah, he does. And he goes back to Jesus, and they have this little dialogue. And then going on to the next slide, he says, well, then, Peter, you know, yeah, we're going to do that. So instead of offending them, go down to the lake and throw in a line. Open the mouth of the first fish you catch, and you will find a large silver coin. So let's just stop right there. The temple tax was required by every Jewish citizen. All of the disciples were Jewish citizens. And every Jewish citizen that was the age of 20 or older. So anybody that was 20 or older was required to pay the temple tax. Jesus was in his early 30s. And so he says to Peter, yeah, we're going to pay the tax. We don't want to offend them because of me and my disciples. We don't want to offend these guys. So go out and catch a fish. And when you find this fish, you're going to find a coin. And when you get that coin, take it and pay the tax for both of us. Not all 13 of us. Why? Because apparently 11 of them weren't even 20 yet. And so then over in Acts chapter 16, Jesus is getting ready to leave this earth. He's risen from the grave. And they said, are you going to come back? And he's like, no, that's not the time. And they're there in this moment. He says, you're going to receive power when the Holy Spirit comes upon you. And he says to these 12 or 11 at that point, because Judas is out of the picture, you will be my witnesses, telling people about me everywhere, in Jerusalem, throughout Judea, in Samaria, and to the ends of the earth. So these under 20-year-olds, Jesus said, it's your job to create this thing, to spread the message of Jesus. And you and I are here in 2024 because a bunch of teenagers pulled it off. And so I think, and again, I don't think I have to make a case with us anyway, but I think we can be like, yeah, let's encourage, let's challenge, let's grow our students. Let's fan that spark into something. Because God used a young pastor, a young couple, and young guys to do everything. And the church should empower the next generation. So MC3 has MC3 student. Now, we're going to jump into the Churchianity Lab. And Bill, would you mind going back and letting Ignition know 11:35 to 11:40, because I don't want you guys to miss what we're about to do here. So go ahead to the next element in the slideshow there. I think I just muted myself. Okay. Oh, I'm not wearing my stuff. I got distracted. Okay, now we're in the Churchianity Lab. And what I want to do for just a few minutes, you have in front of you the MC3 student staff. And these guys have been committed for multiple years here with your students, with our students. And I wanted to give you a chance to hear a little bit of their heart. In a few minutes, I said, we'll totally be up here by 11:10. In the few minutes that we've got here, I wanted to hear some of their hearts. So starting on the left, we've got Kurt and Jody Kramer. You're right. Our MC3 student coordinator, Zach Cruis, and his wife, Becca. And then Scott and Janine Allen as well. So, if my notes load, I've got some great questions for you. All right, then. So, we'll wing it a little bit. Maybe I can find it on my phone. So one of the things that I was going to ask you guys from the beginning is that people say, and they've got microphones to share, and you guys need to use the microphone. People say that working with students is the worst. Like, I remember telling people I was a youth pastor, and they're like, oh, why would you do that? Why would you work with students? And so my question for you is, why are you doing this? Yeah.
Up to my mouth?
Yep.
I actually love working with teenagers and students. It's a passion of mine. So your teenagers and students are in the best of hands with me. I take it as being a second mom for them. So that's my love and my passion.
Anybody else?
I think I agree. I love working with kids, all ages. I actually just came from preschool, so I need to wrap my head around the older kids now. But yeah, I love working with them. I mean, I hope I offer something to them, but at the same time, like, I love what they're giving me as well. Like, there isn't a night that I don't go home where I haven't learned something from them. So I'm always in awe of what they know, too.
Excellent. Maybe one more?
Yeah. They're just fun. I mean, like, they say some funny things sometimes, and just watching them grow and mature, they're a lot of fun.
That's great. So here's a practical question now. When we talk, and of course Jody wasn't, I guess you were here because I went so long. When we talk about being the other voice, what does that mean to you? Like, how does that look? What does that look like in student ministry to be the other voice alongside of parents?
I mean, I guess I'll go. Hi, I'm Zach. So, to being the other voice, I mean, like Sean touched on this slightly, where he told the story about how Sean, you know, says something that's super profound, and the student's like, yeah, that's really awesome. I'm gonna change my life because of this. And the parent's like, I've been telling you this for the past 3 years. And so being that other voice, I mean, as students are growing out of the home, it allows them. It allows, I guess, the proper shepherding to get them to where God's calling them. And so being another voice is being another shepherd. It's not us being the primary shepherd. I mean, we're only with your kids for what, if you include everything we do, at maximum maybe 3 hours a week, when you're with them so much more. So it's like, how can we come alongside you and help? And I mean, that's the whole point of Parent Connect. Is so it's like, oh hey, like my kids, my student's best friend, his parents are going through a divorce. They're having a hard time. Like, let's sit, let's talk about that. Let's come alongside your student to be a light for Christ.
Just out of curiosity, and Zach, don't answer this, but someone else can. Just here's a common thought. Are you guys the enemies of the parents?
No.
I think somewhere in there, there's this like, oh, I don't want to hear these things about my kids, or I don't want to, like maybe you're about to say some more, yeah.
I mean, I have a teenager, so I know that the teenager doesn't always listen to me, but she can listen to Janine. I might have been telling her something for weeks, but Janine says it and she listens. I think it's the same way for us as adults. I mean, we need everybody in this room. Everybody has something different to offer. And with that, I mean, that's what we're trying, is just to take and help the kids and help them learn and grow.
Yeah. And I can say this just from a legal perspective, too, or if you want to call it that, being a youth pastor. Like, if your students were to say something that is, like, not like, hey, the other day I saw a dog and I didn't like it. Like, okay, that's not a profoundly deep, heartful thing. But if they share things, I know that they will go to you. And I know this isn't encouraging the students. Like, well, what about being secret? There is never a promise to keep anything from parents. I just want you to know that. As students, that's probably frustrating because, like, well, who can I tell my secrets to? Now, they're not just going to abandon you or just, you know, call you in on the cops to the parents, but be like, hey, how can we talk to your parents about this together? Because, again, that idea of coming alongside of you. So please don't be intimidated by that relationship. So I think you guys hit the nail on the head with that question. So here's a question. You guys have been doing, all of you have been doing this for multiple years. And I want to know, what advantages do you see in your relationships with students by remaining consistent over time? Like, not an in and out, not a once and done.
A couple things. I think I've been doing this 4 years, so I feel like I've developed strong relationships with several students. There's not the door swinging with student prime leaders going and coming, so the students see consistency with the leaders staying the same. All of us have been the same team now for several years, so the students see the consistency here, so they're willing to come and be there all the time and knowing that the same team is here, and so they're willing to join and keep coming back. So I think us being the same is helping them continue, and our numbers are great. Like, we have a lot of outsiders come, which I think is wonderful as well. And they confide in us because they know that we're consistent, which I think helps them be consistent with, I lost my word.
Okay. Scott will finish the word.
To piggyback off of Janine here, I think consistency is important because it's stability. And kids and students need stability so they know they can come here and the same people that they can count on, you know, every week, every Tuesday, or, you know, every game night, they know that we're going to be here, we're going to be there for them, and give them that outside influence that they need.
Yeah. So can I just say this on their behalf? I'll say it on their behalf. This is important. You heard that. There's a lot of commitment that goes into being a student prime leader. And these guys deserve your respect and your gratitude for what they've poured into our... They deserve my respect and gratitude for what they poured into our students. So, first of all, before we keep going any further, can we just show them that gratitude? Which then leads me to another thing, too, because I am so grateful. And I know, Zach, we've talked over the years, just the stability from a leadership perspective is so wonderful, too. But it doesn't mean that this is a closed group, right? You're not like just us and nobody else. Right? Is that okay? Yeah? You want? So why should other people join?
Okay, Amy muted me back there. it's really cool to watch these students grow and to be a part of their lives. Like, growing up, just knowing, let's be real here, teenagers, students can... They got the hormones going, puberty's going. A lot of things might not be stable up here, but they might have a stable household. Us being stable is so rewarding, and like being here so long, it's like we get to see a little bit of the harvest of like the seeds that we've planted, and it's super super rewarding to be consistent with these students. I'm trying to prevent myself from like rambling and like going on about this because I'm gonna get so passionate and then it's like it's gonna be like Sean too and it's gonna be rough. But being a part of this team, you really get to see the long term effect of what God's doing in our students' lives. Mm-hmm. It's really amazing.
You guys have fun too.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lot of fun that happens with this team. So if you're interested, I'm sure Zach would be glad to talk to you. If you're not serving at MC3, maybe you are, and you're like, you know what? I need to step up and be fanning that flame of the next generation, fanning that spark to do that. So certainly talk to Zach and that anybody on this team. So another question here, and, you know, someone else perhaps than Zach so he doesn't ramble. But why should parents of students, why should parents attend Parent Connect?
I just think, I mean, it's your opportunity to take and see how your students are doing in Student Prime, you know, what they may be opening up about, what they're learning. I just think, I don't know how to answer it exactly. It's just a time for us to connect with you guys. I mean, do you have any questions about what we're doing with them? Would you like to see anything that we're doing with them? It's a cool time to get to know each other and have fun and just talk and enjoy each other's company. And, I mean... I don't know. I've been doing this for a while, so I'm just sitting up here thinking. Some of these students that are in Student Prime now, I had in preschool. So now I'm feeling old. I've been where I've been teaching them, you know, Jesus loves you, to now, like, why does Jesus love you? And give me more details about it. So, I mean, I think it's just a great opportunity to get to know each other and learn more about what we're doing with them.
We have premium coffee and good donuts.
Oh, okay, coffee and donuts.
I lost my train of thought. So going off of what Jody said, because of a lot of our students are now driving to Student Prime, we don't always get that chance to connect with parents. you know, our 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th graders who aren't driving, Zach can go out and, you know, chit-chat in the parking lot. We can, you know, when you're dropping off, picking up, whatnot. But since a lot of them are driving, we don't always see our parents on a weekly basis. And sometimes Sunday mornings are a little busy. So Parent Connect just gives us that really good, intentional opportunity to connect with our parents and say, hey, how can we come alongside you as you're parenting your kids? What can we do to help?
Excellent. Yeah. So the next Parent Connect is October 27th. That is the fourth Sunday in October, out there in the parking lot with good coffee and donuts. And you'll get to meet these guys, talk to them, and if you haven't already met them, but even be able to share those things. And this is also two ways, not just them. It's not like, hey, it's not parent-teacher conference when they're like, well, Johnny didn't do his assignments last week. Are you aware of that? Like, it's how can we help you? And it's also an opportunity for you to share things that maybe they need to be aware of. Hey, I just wanted you to know, like as Zach mentioned, you know, one of our kids' friends' his parents are going through a divorce. It's been hard for them. And so just so they're aware of some of that, because certainly the background helps flavor some of the emotions. And, you know, students have emotions. They've got hormones. There's a lot of things that are all not sure. Their frontal lobes aren't fully developed in boys until they're, what, 25. So, you know, guys don't make wise choices until they're 26. So just to be able to help that. So one last question for you guys, and I know this is kind of, I don't even know if this is my list for you, but how can MC3 pray for you? And maybe if you want to answer individually, or Zach, you want to answer on behalf of the group, but how can we pray for you as you serve students?
I mean, to pray for us, I would think just, you know, that we keep having that passion and that we keep, you know, having the motivation and just that we keep growing the students and that we're able as a group to keep coming together and support one another and be there for each other, but also knowing that we're there for you guys. Like, you know, just overall pray for everybody as a group that we can just keep supporting this program and that we just can keep thriving at it.
I can think of a few ways. Like, so number one, this us doing this is a marathon. Like, it's not a sprint. It's a marathon. This is us meeting with your students every week that there's a prime group. We're meeting with your students, and we're doing it over 4 years. Like, the average turnaround for student staff is a year. It's a single school year, and we're like 400%ing that, and it's like thank God for the perseverance that like my team has, because I'm like, this shouldn't be working the way it is, but it is because of God. Pray that more people get interested. Guys, pray for our students. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on, just in the world. Pray for their hearts. Pray for our hearts, and that we're able to communicate what God wants us to communicate to these students, and build them up.
Anything else?
It's tough to follow that one, but I think just prayers for the students and us, that we keep having that passion, that drive to make a difference. And that the students keep coming, and they spread the word, and more students come, so we can get as big as we can get. You know, think of it just, you know, like that old movie, The Blob. You know, we just keep going and spreading, and, you know, spreading the good news.